Blog Talk Radio.
How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I tell you what, brother, I'm doing great, man, despite my boy Alfonso laying an egg on national TV. My goodness, I have to tell you, James, I know we don't want to really get into this yet, but I'm going to. That was quite possibly the worst fight that I've seen since Chris Bird faced Devarah Williamson on Showtime. It was that bad. It was like Steve Albert described it. It was like watching paint dry. I mean, it was that bad. Both guys just looked like they didn't want to fight. But, you know, I would like to start off the show saying something, guys. I posted some comments on Facebook about Floyd Jr.'s current situation. And, you know, I apologize, guys, if I offended anyone. And, again, this is a very, very touchy subject, and it really has very little to do with boxing other than it's Floyd Mayweather Jr. So just want to start off by saying I sincerely apologize if I offended anyone. That wasn't my intent. And from this point forward, I will not go on Facebook and discuss any of those topics publicly. Okay? So, again, I just wanted to say to the Fight Saga and Pro Boxing faithful that I apologize, and I will not be discussing that topic publicly. So, if it's not boxing, I won't be discussing it. So, I want to thank you guys for always being loyal. You know, our great friends are friends on Facebook and our supporters of Fight Saga and Pro Boxing. And just wanted to tell them thank you for listening to the show. And again, I apologize if I offended anyone. So, moving forward. Moving forward, guys, a lot has happened this week. And again, this 2012 boxing year is already shaping up to be a great one. Again, despite the awful, awful headliner that we were just, again, witness to on Friday Night Fights in Key West, Florida. James, let me ask you this. What were you thinking, man, while you were watching this? And I know we all had a vested interest in kind of Alfonso. He's a great friend of the show, and he's a great guy. And, you know, he's a very good fighter, although you really wouldn't know it by that style matchup. What were your thoughts when you actually – I know you were busy in Indio, California, but I know you had to have seen the replay. And what were your thoughts when you saw and you found there and you heard the results of what had happened in Key West, Florida?
Well, you know, I'm not going to be quite as politically correct as you were, Joe. But as far as what I saw there. This is kind of hard for me to put into words because, Joe, he left the Mexican at home.
You know what? Very well put. You know, it's funny. It's like he was really afraid, you know, going into this, he was afraid that he was going to get baited into a firefight, and that's one of the reasons why he tried to box. But, you know, it's, yeah, dude, he should have, you know, Lopez, come on, puro Mexicano, Holmes. Go down, brother. I don't know about you, man, but I like to see a little more fight in my fight. That was a little ridiculous. It's like, dude, is this square dancing? Bow to your partner. Do-si-do, man. I mean, come on, dude. This was ridiculous. All I can say is I was shocked. I was really shocked that this was a John David Jackson strategy. You know, John David Jackson is probably one of the most underrated and underappreciated trainers in boxing. He was a great fighter, and he's a great trainer and a great strategic mind. So this was actually really shocking that a John David Jackson fighter like Dia Davis would actually implement this ugly and uneventful fight style to kick things off for 2012. I don't know about you, brother. I was very disappointed in both fighters' performance. And, you know, it's pretty obvious that, you know, and I spoke to Alfonso in great length the next day, and he was just really upset that, and he had never experienced this before, and his first comments out of his mouth, he told me that he knows how every single opponent that John Ruiz ever faced feels. He had never experienced a fighter who didn't want to fight, and he really didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to handle it. And I'm like, what do you mean you didn't know how to handle it? And he goes, well, I'd never gone through this, not even in the amateurs, not ever. And so, again, he didn't get knocked out. He didn't even get roughed up. He lost a decision, a very, you know, honestly, dude, James, if it were up to me, if I were a judge at ringside, I would have scored every one of those crappy rounds a 10-10, just so neither guy would get the victory or the loss because it was that bad. I mean, it was really, really awful. And it's again, both guys are in serious trouble because their market value is at an all-time low at this point. So, again, it'll be interesting to see what both guys do from here because, quite honestly, their options have been reduced considerably after that awful, awful fight. I mean, if you can call it a fight. I mean, it was bad. I've seen better fights, man, at an elementary school. I mean, it was that bad.
Well, you know, you spoke upon, you know, a really interesting and touching subject as far as judging and scoring has been lately. Joe, the more that I get introduced to some of the scoring and the way some of these fighters have adopted styles now, you know, I'm becoming more and more of a proponent of computerized scoring.
Oh, you mean like the Olympics?
Yes, sir.
You know, that might have not been a bad idea for this one because this was an ugly fight. But you look at the final scorecards, 190, a clean sweep. Wow, that again, it was really hard to favor one fighter over the next. I mean, how can you reward Guy Davis for hugging the guy the entire time? That was awful. Just an awful, awful just performance by both guys. And again, you know, it looked like, again, the way Alfonso described it to me, he said every time he tried to chuck that straight right down the pipe, Dia just, again, got his arm and got him in an arm bar, basically, got him in a lock and just held on. He said it got so bad that he was squeezing him. And, you know, he said that the ref through the entire fight would say, okay, hey, don't hold. And he was waiting for the ref to take a point off, and he never did. And, you know, quite honestly, I can understand that because, I mean, we've been around boxing forever, and we've seen guys get disqualified for holding less than that. Honestly, they would have done the fight public a great service by disqualifying both guys and just calling a halt to the bout around round five or six. It wasn't for a title. And honestly, neither guy deserved the decision after that horrible performance. And, you know, it would have served the TV audience a lot better to be witness to some of these swing bouts. I would have much rather seen a swing bout, another Lou DiBella fighter. I would have much rather seen that than what we actually had to sit through. That was awful. And I tell you what, ESPN, it's going to be a long time before they invite either one of those guys back to Friday Night Fights. That's just the sad reality of it. And again, I love Alfonso. I love Dia. They're both great guys, but that was just awful. And it does not do the world of boxing any good to display that kind of rubbish on a big stage. What are your thoughts on that, James?
Well, you know, outside of my thinking that you might be a little critical of Alfonso, because, I mean, you know, I think a lot of the fight was dictated to him, and then another part of this, but, you know, you have a famous slogan that actually really pertains to this fight, I guess, more than any other. If you leave it to the judge's scorecard, anything can happen. You know,
that's right.
And when you have two fighters that either refuse to fight or put on a boring performance, you know, like you said, I mean, you know, the sport is already under enough scrutiny. And when you put on a performance like that, the only thing you really do is even, you know, you put that microscope even closer.
Yep. Well, I hate to say this, guys, but again, this is what happens when you actually herald fighters for adopting a safety-first mentality and call it brilliant, an ugly mugging style of fighting. That's what's going to happen. You're going to see more of it if you guys embrace this. Now, again, a lot of it is the boxing writers for heralding previous performances from other fighters, saying that, oh, well, it might not be pretty to look at, but it's effective. It's ultra effective. But it's not technically brilliant, and there's nothing fun about that. There's nothing entertaining about that. So I'm sorry. From this point forward, I am a journalist, and I have a duty to basically report it how I see fit. And from here on out, guys, I am going to just cream anyone who tries to pass that off as pugilism. That was rubbish. So anyone who tries to pass that off, guess what, guys? They're going to get a big no from me, man. They're going to get a big article that's saying, hell no, we don't want that. We do not want to watch that, and that is not good for boxing. So I tell you what, going to the undercard of that, the very first fight of the evening was Duglin versus Martinez, and I think everyone kind of got wrapped up in the Duglin mama's boy story. His mother was training him. Absolutely brilliant story. But did he deserve the majority decision? Now, everyone that I talked to was in utter disbelief that he actually got the nod in that fight. Steve Martinez, he deserved to win that fight. It was a close, and it was a very competitive fight, yes. But Martinez deserved to get that decision. I think a lot of people just fell prey to the feel-good story and rewarded Duglin for that majority decision. But again, like you pointed out and like I always like to say, if you let the fight go to the judges' scorecards, this is what happens, because it becomes a beauty contest. Handle it the way George Foreman did with your left and your right fist. Don't let it go to the judges' scorecards. You know, it's like, gosh, guys, you handle it, do it convincingly, put your foot on the pedal, take some risks in the ring. No guts, no glory. My goodness, frustrating. Now, again, James, let's go to the beautiful fight card of Friday that was handled out, that was actually, it took place at the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, and I'm happy to say, my friend, that you were there, and might I add, you did a really wonderful write-up on FightSaga.com, very good job, and you pointed out some really great insider stuff that I'm sure our listeners and our readers really appreciated, so I'm going to give you the floor, my friend, and fill us in on what your experience was like at with the wonderful people at the Fantasy Springs Resort and Casino in India.
Joe, actually, Fantasy Springs is a very nice venue. The event is often a building to itself called a Special Event Center, so it's kind of away from the casino and the hotel, and you can actually, people actually come in at that venue, and it's a really nice venue. They handled the press well, gave us our pre-fight kits and everything. And out in Indio, it was a really great event. The one thing that was pointed out to me by a lot of the local fans, though, is that even though it was a great fight card, is that there would have probably been a lot bigger participation as far as the fan base if they had had some local fighters. And I think that's something that maybe they should address next time.
You know, this is just, again, Boxing Promotion 101. This doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever why boxing promoters do this. You know, guys, if you're going to have a – it makes absolutely zero sense. It was like Top Rank's decision to go take Nonito Donaire at Madison Square Garden. He's a West Coast fighter, guys. Put him in the Staples Center. Put him anywhere else where, I mean, his fans are going to be able to enjoy watching Nonito fight. He trains out of Vegas. They live in San Francisco. Come on, guys. They're from San Francisco. They're from the Bay Area. They're out of Vegas. Either put the fight in Vegas or in California if you're going to see Nonito fight. And the same rule applies to everyone else. It makes absolutely zero sense to get these fighters from all over the country and put them in a sterile environment like a casino when their fans aren't anywhere close by. Do you think that's good for boxing? No. You don't put it in, I'm sorry. You need to, again, re-energize the sport by, again, having a grassroots campaign and really getting the locals involved with going and seeing their favorite fighters. And I guarantee you, if they had some local talent on the fight card, there would have been a lot of fans there from start to finish, from the first four-round bout to the main event. Again, that's what boxing needs, unfortunately, to pay for a lot of these fight cards and a lot of the talent to be there. They depend on these site fees by the casinos and by the networks. So, unfortunately, that's the state boxing is in right now, and we need to do something to repair that. And I'll get into that a little bit later because Top Rank and Bob Arum are doing a tremendous job of bringing a Class A-plus type fight card to San Antonio, Texas, where real boxing fans can enjoy it. And again, the ticket sales have been tremendous for this event. And again, they're expecting anywhere from 15,000 to 16,000 fans to see Nonito Donaire fight and Chavez Jr. fight in their respective bouts. So anyway, as you were, James, let's get into some of the action that took place on Friday night.
Well, now, there was a very interesting story, the first bout of the evening, Joe, and we kind of discussed it a little bit earlier, and you have a little bit more insight to the management or the trainer than I do, but the first bout was a young prospect, Christopher Pearson. He's out of Trotwood, Ohio. He weighed in at 155.8 pounds, and he's a Jay Johns protege. I'm not sure whether they're together right now or not, but this young man actually made the Olympic team and turned down that berth to turn pro. This was his second fight, and he, of course, had a unanimous decision. But Joe, why don't you tell us a little bit about Mr. Jay Johns? I happened to meet him after the fight, and I know he's kind of one of the old throwback trainers, and you seem to know a lot about him. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about Mr. Jay Johns?
Yeah, he's a great guy, and he manages several fighters out of Houston, Texas. And, you know, I called him up early Saturday to congratulate him on his fighter performance, and he said, well, thank you, I appreciate it. And, you know, he was there, and he still supports Mr. Pearson. But it looks like he is not under the capable hands of Mr. Jay Johns any further, that he just signed a lucrative deal with Mr. Al Haymon. And, again, he wants what's best for his fighters. And Jay is just a true gentleman of the sport, and he told me that, look, I wasn't about to stand in the way of Chris's future, and it, and if he got the opportunity to sign with Mr. Al Haymon, then, you know, that's what's best. I mean, Al Haymon obviously brings a lot to the table for any fighter. I mean, look at the masterful job he's done getting his guys on HBO, Gary Russell, Adrian Bronner. And again, he knows he's going to get a title opportunity a lot sooner if he signs with Mr. Al Haymon. So, again, Jay was a true gentleman about it and says, hey, I'm still going to support my fighters. I mean, they're friends to me. I love all these guys. And again, he's a real credit to the sport. And I wish everyone had that kind of mentality and good cheer for all of their fighters and wish them well. And so as a result, I was talking to Jay, and he is currently managing Mr. Rocky Juarez. Rocky Juarez has been slated to fight Yuriorkis Gamboa within the next couple months. And guess what? He's going to be on the Pugilist Corner talking about his upcoming bout. And again, all of us who know and are familiar with Rocky Juarez, they know he's had some bad luck in the ring, but he's put on some great performances. You know, his spirited effort against Marco Antonio Barrera several years ago, he's got a monster left hook. So if, I mean, this could be a true, no pun intended, but a true Rocky Balboa style story. This has feel good written all over it. And so I am just extremely happy for Jay Johns and Rocky Juarez. And it's going to be interesting to talk to him about his upcoming fight and everything that he's been through on the Pugilist Corner this Tuesday. Now, speaking of the Pugilist Corner, guys, we have a really great show for you coming up on Tuesday. We've already confirmed that Mr. Nonito Donaire is going to be on the show as our first guest. Then we're going to have Lamont Peterson, who's going to be talking about this entire just ordeal with Golden Boy and Amir Khan. So that should be exciting. And again, we're going to have Rocky Juarez closing out the show. And it's going to be co-hosted by one of our favorite fighters, Mr. Austin No Doubt Trout. So it should be a lot of fun this Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. But yeah, it's Jay's a really great guy, and I'm really happy that you had the good fortune of running into him at Indio, California. But, you know, let me ask you, James, what did you think of Mr. Omar Figueroa and Mr. Michael Angelo Perez in the opening bout of that televised portion?
Well, Joe, you know, I met both guys right after the weigh-in, and at the time, Mr. Figueroa was a little overweight, so he had to go out and of course, make weight. Both of them came in at 134. Omar, like you said, I mean, you know, in any fight that he goes in, he's going to have a puncher's chance. I mean, you could actually tell the weight of his punches. I mean, it was obvious, you know. The body shots, you know, after the second round, that they were taking their toll. He has a lot of patience for such a young man. And, you know, Joe, like I said, I know you laugh at me every time I say it, but this guy looks like some young kid that should be out playing soccer somewhere. You would never this kid is a boxer, and not just a boxer. He's a tough fighter.
That's right. He has a fighter's heart and a fighter's mentality where he doesn't mind. You know, these are the kind of fighters that will further the sport of boxing. And my hat's off to both Perez and Figueroa because, again, they knew that they were in a fight. They embraced it, and they just came in face first. You know, Omar received a lot of criticism over the last several months. Again, he was signed by Golden Boy. And, you know, he had been in some tough, tough fights, you know, and he had hired different trainers to work on his defense, and that didn't really pan out, one of them being my good friend, Mr. Jesse James Lehigh. You know, James doesn't get enough credit for being a very accomplished trainer and a very good trainer in San Antonio. And he is very underrated as far as his defensive prowess in the ring, but he's a guy who fought in a million fights and never really took a beating. throughout his entire career, and that's one of the reasons why he had the longevity that he had. Well, he tried to teach Omar, and that didn't really work out because, again, you need to have that chemistry, and that's no fault to either guy. You know, if the chemistry's not there, it's just not going to work out. So he had been through some trainers, and I think he's finally figured out, Omar, that, hey, man, you know, my defense isn't what's going to win me these fights. I know why they signed me, because I've got heavy hands, and I like to use them. And so that's what I'm going to just, again, dance with what brought me here. So that's exactly what he did, man. Now tell me. Now tell me, Omar, or tell me, James, what did you think, who did you think was winning the fight before the fight was stopped?
Well, you know, now, on all the cards, actually, we all had Perez behind Omar. Was like I said, he was definitely the heavier the puncher. Perez would, he is a boxer. He's a very shrewd boxer. He did the best that he could. But you could tell, like I said, after about the third round, when Omar started going into the body, you could kind of tell that, you know, I mean, it wasn't as dramatic as Rocky, but you could tell, you know, you can kind of see that fire in the guy's eyes, that spark, like, kind of slowly die out.
Yeah.
He was actually taking, you know, Omar actually, I think, kind of took the starch out of Michael right around the fifth round. And
yeah,
after the cut, it was kind of obvious that someone didn't want to go on. The official thing, the official report was doctors stopped, advised, it was stopped on doctor's advice. But it was kind of surprising to all of us in press row when the fight was stopped. But like I said, after about the fourth or fifth round, it was obvious who had the heavier punches. In the second and fourth round, Michael was able to dance around a little bit, and he did manage to secure those rounds. But in the rounds where Omar was able to keep a close touch on him, he definitely made his presence known.
So fill us in on what your reaction was, and everyone at press row, when you realized that the judges had Perez up overwhelmingly over the eventual winner, Omar Figueroa.
Well, you know, we really didn't understand it, but then, you know, after the scorecards came back, we found out that a lot of I don't, you know, we didn't, no one knew where actually the rumors that came from, but when the official scorecards came out, Judge Fitzwarner had scored the fight 55-56 up to that point. Excuse me, 58-56 for Omar, which was precisely the score I had. And like I said, he had given the second and actually he had given the first and third rounds, Michael. Judge James Kinn, he had the fight at 59-55, also for Omar, but he gave Omar 5 out of the 6 rounds, and we all kind of had a problem with that. But you know, again, Judge Danny Sandoval had a shutout for Omar, so no one could really say. You know, I mean, this fight was kind of clouded in mystery. You know, the stoppage on advice of the doctor. You know, the way the whole fight ended, then you know, the thing about the scorecards. I mean, but in the end, it was a right decision. I mean, definitely everyone knew that. I mean, like I said, you saw that Omar had the heavier punches. You saw Michael starting to back up. So, you know, they got it right. But you know, Joe, there has to be, I mean, you know, like, for this scoring, I mean, you know, maybe we should, you know, do like the bingo guys, you know, and put the little dabs on their gloves, you know, and let judges could actually count. But actually, last night I came up with a really good idea, Joe, and you know, I want you to tell me what you think about this. I think we should attach electrodes, one for the red corner and one for the blue corner, and you attach one to their behind, and you attach one to their genitals, and each fight, and then maybe they can count and see which fighter scored the most punches.
Well, here's the problem with that, James.
Get grabbed by, you know, I mean, come on now.
Here's the problem with that, James. Again, this is why I always urge fighters to press the action and get the knockout. Because again, if it's that way, then it's going to turn into amateur boxing, and you're just going to have someone trying to pot shot from the outside and try to score points. You're not going to have a really because a lot of judges, again, they look for effective aggression. They look for who's putting their body weight into the shots, who's actually scoring the more damaging blows. And if you start looking at basically just point stats, and I know this is, again, it makes a lot more sense on paper, you know, because it's more objective, and you get a punch stat and a punch total rather than just opinion, all right? But in the professional ranks and what we love to see, you know, an effective aggressor, guy who's forcing the action, a guy who's really sitting down on his shots and really digging into the body, again, those aren't going to really weigh as heavily if you just look at the punch totals. And this is one of the reasons why in the amateurs and in the Olympics, you don't see a lot of guys that have that pressing, aggressive style. You see a lot of guys who pot shot from the outside and just like to tally up points. And then when they go to the professionals, they're like, wait a minute. I'm not used to fighting an effective aggressor and a guy who's constantly in my grill. And it's really difficult to transcend that style of fighting to the professional ranks because you get a lot of really great aggressive fighters that don't have a really sparkling amateur pedigree but are super effective in the pros. So it's really difficult. It's you know, it ends up being a beauty contest at the end of the day, what the judge actually prefers. Like, let's take the Amir Khan Lamont Peterson fight. Okay, there were a lot of judges that saw that Amir Khan was throwing and landing more shots, but Lamont Peterson was constantly pressing the action, digging to the body, and looked like he was dictating the pace of the fight. So at the end of the day, you've got a very tough and close fight, but who do you reward? Now, I know we had Emmanuel Stewart on the pugilist corner this past Tuesday, and he was saying if he were scoring the fight, he would have easily given the fight to Lamont Peterson because you look at the mentality that both fighters had. You know, Lamont Peterson was trying to press the action. He was sitting down on his shots. He was landing the harder, more damaging blows. He even mentioned that the shots that were hitting Amir Khan's gloves were rocking him. Okay, but Amir Khan was landing. Okay, but again, Emmanuel Stewart pointed to the mentality that he was basically fighting almost like an amateur fighter where he was just trying to jump in, throw combinations, pushing his shots, but they were landing. But they weren't nearly as effective. So this is why you have all the controversy surrounding that fight, because at the end of the day, it's basically what the judges prefer. It's a beauty contest. And so, you know, it just, again, that goes to our next topic, guys. Well, no, we're not even finished talking about the full fight card, are we?
Oh, no.
Hey, well, let's get back to this, but let's talk about the great fight in the main event between Raimundo Beltran and Luis Ramos Jr. James, what were your thoughts going into this fight and throughout the action, and what did you think of the judge's decision?
Well, Joe, you know, first of all, this was the best fight of the night. And everyone was talking, of course, the big talk was with Luis Ramos Jr. coming in undefeated, 20-0 with 9 knockouts, against the veteran, Ramon Bell Beltran, 25-5, who had just came off a very controversial loss. Now, I must tell you, Luis Ramos Jr. won this fight, okay? And it was definitely wall-to-wall action. It was best fight card. As a matter of fact, it was better than probably the entire fight card that you had to suffer through.
Yeah, unfortunately it was, my friend. What were your thoughts on how Luis Ramos faced and handled the kind of adversity that he faced against Beltran? I mean, going into this fight, we all knew that Beltran was hungry for a victory. And he even, you know, in your brilliant interview with him before the fight, you know, he even told you as much. Now, what did Beltran actually tell you before that fight?
Well, the first thing, you know, he said to me was, you know, for him, this was almost a do-or-die situation because of the last fight that he had lost and because he felt, you know, that this was a fight for his vindication, not only for his vindication but for his career, because basically he's been considered a gatekeeper, even though he has 17 KOs and he's 25-5, which for anyone else, I mean, that would be a great record, but he's fighting in the 134-pound division, 135, excuse me. And, you know, the one thing he said is that he wants to be a contender. He doesn't want to be a gatekeeper. In other words, a club fighter. And he went in with this attitude that, you know, I have to win or my career, or I have to reevaluate my career. You know, I met his family. You know, he has a little baby, and you know, he's an all around family man. But he is a warrior, and he went into the fight with that mentality, facing a young prospect that everyone expects great things from, and I think you know, he kind of, and I guess in a Shakespearean way, I guess he kind of saw this exactly what was going to unfold in this fight.
Now, let me ask you this. Going to the end of the fight, and again, Ramos fought a great fight. And again, it was a tremendous test of will, and both guys brought it, and it didn't disappoint. But let me ask you this, man, from ringside, what was going on with Beltran? What was he saying to some of the fans, and why did they have to escort him back to his dressing room?
Well, unfortunately, the way to the dressing room ran through a group of Ramos supporters. and, you know, to be quite frank, Ramondo kind of felt that once again he had been robbed, and he was, you know, he was actually, you know, kind of offended by some of the remarks that were made by, you know, the Ramos crowd. And, I mean, you know, in a way, I mean, you know, it has to be understandable. You know, you lose the fight, and then you have to walk through the other guys, you know, supporters and entourage. So, yes, he was a little upset, to say the least.
Yeah, you know, but again, it's in a close fight, and if you let it go to the judges' scorecards, hey, man, you run the risk of this happening. And again, we see this far too often in boxing, and again, it's really despicable. You know, and again, that leads me to our next topic is Amir Khan and Lamont Peterson.
Joe, before you go on, let me tell you a little story, because I happened to meet a great friend of Ramondo's during the prelims.
And, Awesome. Let's hear it, my friend.
And one of the reasons why I happened to be attracted to this guy when I saw him walking around was because he had on an old Denver Elway throwback jersey. I'm sitting there with my Steelers jersey on, which, you know, we're not going to go into that today. This is a boxing show. But anyway, the gentleman comes in and he sits down on press row between me and some other people that were there. And we started talking, and, you know, he's one of the first things he says to me is like, you know, I'm a good friend of Ramondo Beltran's, and, you know, he's looking forward to the fight, but there's a lot of things going on, and, you know, he might, you know, if he doesn't knock this guy out, there's a good chance that he won't get a decision. Well, you know,
and he's telling you this at the beginning of the fight. Okay, now tell us who this mystery guy was, and I'm sure anyone who is watching the broadcast knows, but tell us anyway, my friend.
Well, it turns out that the guy that I'm talking to is none other than Mr. Paul Malignaggi, the gentleman who just a show last month.
That's right. The Twitter king, Paulie Malignaggi. That's right.
You know, but Paulie was there to make an appearance. He had to leave there and go up and sit up, ringside. But he's out here in California looking for another matchup, you know. But great guy, real nice personality, you know, real easy access to the press. And he has a tremendous following out here. Now, if he would be a mainliner at Tennessee Springs, I'm sure that would fill up the place.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Paulie's a great guy, and he's a great fighter. And, you know, it's amazing for having this reputation of not being the heaviest puncher in the world. Boy, that guy has a set of brass, doesn't he? I mean, this guy always puts forth a spirited effort, and he always stares right in the face of the heavier-handed opponents, and he says, you know, bring it on, dude. You know, and he's a throwback fighter. He's a guy that's going to stick and move. He's a guy that's going to stand in front of you and make you look bad. So there's no wonder why the top guys at 140 don't want to face him, you know, especially now with his new trainer. I mean, you know, he's relocated, I guess, during fights. He's relocated to L.A., and he was telling us as much when he was on the show. And it looks like, you know, it's and he's now signed with Golden Boy, so it looks like he's becoming somewhat of an avoided guy at 140. And, you know, he's not the biggest name, but, you know, he's enough to attract a lot of attention. And he's going to make you look bad in the ring. So, again, I hope he gets a big fight coming up here soon with Golden Boy behind him. But, guys, let's talk about Golden Boy right now and how they've handled this Amir Khan situation. I have to tell you, there's way too much of this going on in boxing. You know what? I'm sorry, but this is despicable the way they've handled this entire Lamont Peterson rematch issue. And, you know, shame on them. They should know better. And like Emmanuel Stewart was saying on our show last Tuesday, you know, Oscar De La Hoya should know better. He's been on the winning end of some gift decisions. Now, again, we're looking at Felix Turner, and he's been on the end of some bad decisions like the one with Felix Trinidad. But he should know this is boxing. What do? You don't cry about it. One of the reasons why they're crying about it is because Lamont Peterson, when he came on the show right after his title-winning effort, he stated that these guys don't have a rematch clause. They don't have any options. They were so confident that their guy was going to come in Washington, D.C. and blast me that they didn't even bother giving me or getting options from my future fights, putting in a rematch clause. They've got nothing. So what have they tried to do? They've tried to put him in checkmate by screaming foul, by appealing to the sanctioning bodies. And all the while, it makes them look like a bunch of big crybabies. I mean, they have handled this situation and they have the nerve to criticize Bob Arum and his business dealings. I'm sorry, guys. I've been to Golden Boy events. I've been to Drew DiBella events, Gary Shaw, Top Rank, and I'm sorry, guys. They need to learn. They still have a lot to learn. They've been a promoter now for 10 years, I guess. But they still have a lot to learn in how to treat fighters and how to treat cities and how to really take care of people in their events. You know, they have a ton of fighters, really. They do. And, you know, again, why are they making such a big commotion out of all of this? You know, it's like if they had just smiled and stated, you know, guys, you know, it was a really tough fight and could have gone either way, and we're just really anxious to get the rematch. Guess what? The rematch would have already been set because that's the kind of guy that Lamont Peterson is. But instead, they've tried to handle it this way. James, what are your thoughts on that?
Joe, this is the first time I knew that we had a grassy knoll inside a building. You know?
Isn't that ridiculous? What is the deal with the mystery man and trying to force the sanctioning bodies to call for an immediate rematch?
I mean, you know, come on, Joe, this is ridiculous. I mean, you know, what will we have next? I mean, you know, what do we got? Covert affairs now? I mean, come on, Joe. I mean, please. You know,
this is ridiculous. You know what, man? You know, shame on them.
I actually, before this, you know, I mean, you know how I feel about, you know, Lamont Peterson as a professional. And before this, you know, I really actually, you know, I felt, you know, hey, you know, this is a great chance for Lamont, you know, and go ahead and give him the rematch. You know, but now, you know, hey, you know, I'm from the hood. I tell you, you know, go kick rocks or bring me more money. I'm sorry. You know.
You know, and they're just really fuming right now that they didn't show Lamont the appropriate respect and consider that he might actually have a chance of winning this fight with Amir Khan. And now they're crying about it. I'm like, you know what, guys? You want to go into Washington, D.C. You want to take all the fans' money. And you want to disrespect the opponent by not taking them as seriously as you should have. And then you want to cry about it and claim that, oh, we're never going to bring an event to Washington, D.C. again. We didn't realize that it was this slanted. I'm sorry, but I thought it was a great fight that could have gone either way. Whenever you have a great fight that could go either way, you don't complain about the decision. You count your money and you book the next one. Why on earth are they taking this approach? It makes them look awful. And then they want to scream and cry about Bob Arum not wanting to do business with them? I'm sorry, but they've got no leg to stand on any further. I mean, they've handled this as atrociously as anyone could have possibly handled that situation. Again, we should be talking about the rematch right now, not a mystery man with a blue hat. That is absolutely absurd, and that is bad for boxing. I'm sorry, guys, but, you know, we love good drama in the ring, but and we love a little storyline in the background, but this is ridiculous. This is absolutely absurd. And I tell you what, man, let's, you know, I hope to see a rematch because I love to see another great fight. But if Lamont Peterson wants to go somewhere else, I completely understand, you know, because of how they've treated and disrespected Mr. Barry Hunter and Mr. Lamont Peterson. I am fully behind him if he wants to go somewhere else. Now, guys, talking about another soap opera that's developing, let's talk about the Top Rank soap opera and Lou DiBella. Now, guys, Chavez Jr. has received a ton of criticism regarding the public perception that he is currently purposely avoiding Mr. Sergio Martinez. You know, and I was lucky enough to speak with him when he was in San Antonio for the press conference announcing their February 4th bout with Marco Antonio Rubio. Now, guys, this is his WBC mandatory opponent, Sergio Martinez. Obviously, he's the champion emeritus, and he deserves a fight with the WBC champion. okay? But, honestly, guys, I'm excited to see Chavez versus Rubio. You know, Sergio, they, you know, WBC just stated that, again, as long as both guys take care of business, Martinez is slated to face Matthew Maclin and MSG on St. Patrick's Day, and Chavez is scheduled to fight Rubio on February 4th. As long as both guys are successful, that fight will indeed take place. But you know what, guys? These are no gimme fights. Matthew Maclin is one tough fighter. And honestly, Sergio, focus on Matthew Maclin because he's going to bring it, and it's going to be a very, very tough fight. And Chavez Jr., boy, you're going to have your hands full against a veteran like Marco Antonio Rubio. I spoke to Rubio in great length, and the video interview is supposed to come out this week on FightSaga.com, and Rubio is amped. He says, you know what, I don't care if there's a belt or not. Luckily, the WBC has stated that this will indeed be a title defense, and it'll be sanctioned. So he is going to have an opportunity at the belt, but he said, I don't care. I've wanted Chavez for years. I know I'm a better fighter, and I'm going to take him to school, and I'm going to knock him out. Now, honestly, for my money, I'm ready to see that fight tomorrow. I love that fighter's mentality. I absolutely love that mentality of an opponent, especially someone who has been overlooked. This is going to be a great, great fight, guys. And I spoke to Chavez Jr. in my video interview with him is on FightSaga.com right now. And let me tell you, Chavez Jr. has a chip on his shoulder. It was fuming. I mean, I brought up, and I asked him in a very nice way and very professionally. I said, I have to ask you this. What do you have to say to all of your detractors that are claiming that you were avoiding Sergio Martinez? He got so upset that he started speaking English to me, brother. Sergio Martinez, I'm not afraid. I'm not scared of Sergio Martinez. Why Martinez? I'm not afraid. And, you know, it's one thing for him to, like, chew me out in Spanish. But, dude, he was so upset that he started chewing me out in English. That's how passionately Chavez Jr. feels about all of this. And, guys, all I can say is bring it on. This is going to be tremendous for the sport of boxing. And I, for one, cannot wait. And I'm going to be covering it in the Alamo Dome for FightSaga.com. It's going to be an absolutely tremendous event. Now, I also got to speak with Nonito Donaire and Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. And I have to say, guys, these are two warriors who are very, very respectful guys. They had nothing but the utmost respect for each other. And you're looking at both guys stand side by side. Honestly, people need to put all of the talk on hold for the time being of Nonito moving up to 126 or 130 because, guys, he has his hands full at 122. The verdict's still out on Nonito. I mean, he's a great fighter, and he's a pound-for-pound type fighter. He's a three-division world champion. And, again, he's tackled the biggest and the best of those divisions previous to his stint at 122. Now, I tell you, my hat's off to Nonito. He's a warrior. But, man, he's going to have his hands full against Vasquez Jr. This is a very tough guy and a natural 122-pounder. This is going to be exciting stuff, guys. I cannot wait to see this bout. Now, I spoke with Nonito about who he wants to fight next. And he said, you know, I'm just concentrating on Vasquez Jr. because he's a big, strong, natural super bantamweight. And if I'm successful in getting past Vasquez Jr., I want to stay here and try to clean out the division. And quite honestly, looking at his size next to Vasquez, this is going to be a great, great fight, guys. And I know Nonito is one of the hardest pound-for-pound punchers in boxing, but he's got his work cut out for him at 122. We've got, coming up on the 21st, 222-pound fighters in Guillermo Rigondeaux versus our friend Rico Ramos. Guys, this is going to be a terrific fight. And I asked Nonito, if he planned on fighting the winner of this. And he said, well, no, I'm not looking at these guys just yet. He wants to face Nishioka, who is the WBC champion, and in his last fight took Rafael Marquez to school. Guys, this is a very tough fight for anyone, but for Nonito, it's going to be very, very tough. Good luck closing the distance on Nishioka. This is going to be an extremely difficult fight for him. He was talking about this and possibly fighting Jorge Arce, which, quite honestly, it makes a lot of sense because Arce is a very, very popular fighter, but quite honestly, I don't want to see it. He is going to be able to destroy. I think he's going to destroy Jorge Arce, and I would like to see him just take on Nishioka right after this. James, what are your thoughts on Nonito Donaire and his future at 122?
Well, I think, you know, other than the Japanese gentleman that you just mentioned, and I won't attempt to tie my tongue. But Nonito, you know, he's a guy that I'm really looking forward to meeting him on the show Tuesday because, you know, like I said, this guy has tremendous power, and if he can find a way to close the gap, you know, that would be a great fight. You know, just putting in the work to close that gap would be entertaining. So I would really look forward to that matchup, but I don't want to see the Arce fight. I'm sorry. I have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, you know, I'm a huge fan of El Travieso, and, you know, he just went back down to 118 because I don't even think that he's comfortable fighting the beast of 122. I know he had a great spirited effort against Vasquez Jr. in a candidate for Fight of the Year, and I think it was your Fight of the Year, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it
okay,
was.
You know, that was a tremendous fight. It was a great, great fight. And, you know, you can't discount Jorge Arce in any fight, but
I think he would be
severely outclassed against Nonito Donaire, as well as Nishioka, as well as the Rigondeaux-Ramos fight, as well as another fight with Christian Mijares, who is also now campaigning at 122. Honestly, Travieso needs to stay at 118. And I don't want to see him. I would love to see him face Joseph King Kong Igbeko at 118. Wouldn't you love to see Igbeko versus Arce?
All right. You know, Joe, unfortunately, I was at Igbeko's last fight.
Yep.
And it's going to take a while for me to want to see Igbeko again. I mean, I hate to say this, you know, I mean, because he was just made to look so bad that I don't know if he has another good fight left in him.
Well, I tell you what, brother, we're going to have to continue this discussion on Tuesday. Because, man, we've got a lot to talk about in that, but we've come to the end of the show. And unfortunately, I just want to leave everyone with this. Guys, we are on the verge of having a real breakout year with 2012. And again, Floyd Jr. is not going to jail until June. So again, March 5th is wide open, and I am going to speak with Mr. Don Chargan tomorrow to see if negotiations have started between Canelo Alvarez and Floyd Mayweather Jr. So that, because that seems to be the hot topic right now in boxing. And as soon as I find out, guys, I will publish all of my discoveries on fightsaga.com. So look for that tomorrow, guys, okay? But James, do you have any closing thoughts about your trip to Indio, California?
No, Joe, you know, I would just like to thank Fight Saga for letting me go and to cover the event. Like I said, you know, I stumbled upon Mr. Malignaggi, and, you know, hopefully I made a much better impression. I also got to meet with the up-and-coming Mr. Pearson, and we plan to have him on the show, and he'll talk about his decision to quit the Olympics and go pro. So I'm looking for some great things for us this year, Joe, and I'd like to thank you for making a lot of happy in this corner.
Well, I tell you what, brother, we look forward to having a great show on Tuesday. And again, our guests are going to be Nonito Donaire, Lamont Peterson, and Mr. Rocky Juarez, the new Cinderella Man. It's going to be interesting. So, James, take us out, my friend.
Well, have a great night, everyone. We thank you for listening to the Weekend Wrap. And we will see you Tuesday on the Pitiless Corner. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week.